Now is the time, episode number 11. I'm Caleb Succo, and this is the podcast where we talk about how we can use our lives right now to worship our God. Friends, welcome again to another episode, and today we are going to be talking about pitfalls in parenting. Some mistakes, some problems that, well, honestly, I've seen some of them in my life as a parent. Our oldest is 14, our youngest is 3 right now, and I've also seen in other families. And we're also going to be talking a little bit how we can fix those mistakes, those pitfalls in our parenting. But before we get into that, let me start with just a couple of announcements. I want to highlight some of what is happening next month with the Church Ministries Institute. Some of you know that a big part of our ministry is working with the Church Ministries Institute, which is a school that trains in theology and ministry skills, mainly in local churches. So we have about 300 students that are studying in about 20 different churches here in Ukraine, as well as 3 or 4 in Moldova. And next month is a significant month because of a couple things. One, we have a course coming up here in Odessa, Dynamics of the Local Church, that's going to be taught starting the 14th of October. And then also, while that course is happening, we have an accreditation team coming to check out our school. That's a big thing for us. That's a big thing for our students. So I just really ask that you'd pray that visit by this accreditation team that's going to be kind of looking into our school, talking with students, looking at our records and things like that. Pray that would go well. And then the week after that course and the visit from the accreditation team, we have our annual conference. And that's probably one of the most vital times of the year for our institute, because like I said, our program is being taught in over 20 churches. So mainly the teaching goes on not in the classroom in Odessa, but in local churches throughout Ukraine. So the one time a year that we have to get together is the annual conference. And we're holding that this year in Kyiv, I think the 22nd through the 24th of October. So please pray for that. And if you can, we need your help. We need your support for that conference, because it does cost about $3,000 to run that 3-day conference with, you know, we have our Bible school directors, we have our regional directors there, we have our teachers there, some of our other staff there. And some of those guys are part-time, some of them are just volunteers, honestly, so they can't really afford to foot the cost for the whole thing. So if you can help us with that, you wanted to take part in training local leaders in Ukraine, local church leaders, just have some instructions on how to give in the show notes for this episode, so just check that out, and we would appreciate your help. And many church leaders in Ukraine would appreciate your help with that. All right, let's jump into our topic today, pitfalls in parenting. And, you know, I want to say that the first one is probably the most significant. I have about, eight pitfalls in parenting. But I want to start with the most significant, because I think this one is really rampant in Western culture, and it's part of Western philosophy, Western thinking, if you will. And let me illustrate it first with a little story. A number of years ago, before I was married, in fact, I was still in high school at that time, I worked in a place where I met this family that I think they had 3 kids, 2 of them were older, and then they had a boy that at that time was about 5 years old. And, you know, sometimes when that happens in families, where you get to a younger child that comes, you know, many years after, or you know, a big break in between, there can be some, what's the best way to put it, spoiling, you know? And so I just remember being in the house with this family, that's one time, and that poor boy was literally on the floor crying, flailing, kicking, screaming on the floor. And his poor mother was running around him saying, "Oh, what's wrong? Johnny," that wasn't his real name. I don't remember what his name was actually. What do you need? Do you want ice cream? Do you want to go to McDonald's? Do you want to go outside and play? Do you want to watch a movie? I just don't understand. Why are you crying? What do you need?" And, you know, even as I watched that scene unfold, and I think I was probably about 17 or 18 years old at the time, I remember thinking to myself, I know what that child wants. He just doesn't know how to say it. He just needs a good whack on the rear end, and I can guarantee you that that will cure him. But I really do think that that's what he wanted. But, you know, sometimes our children just don't know what they want. But let's dig into that for a minute. How did that mother get to that state? And you really, you know, you feel bad for a mother in that situation. I think every parent has sort of been there before, where the child is crying and you can't figure out why and you don't know what to do. But here's the deal. And there's a really significant difference in our assumptions about the condition of the child. And I firmly believe that oftentimes what I saw in that family is the result of an assumption that a child is born good. That a child is born good, and if you just give them the right conditions, provide for their physical needs, give them an education, and shelter them from evil people and evil things, then everything will turn out right. But what happens? What happens is, if you live by that assumption, you end up treating your child as a little deity. And, of course, that assumption is wrong. There's a huge difference when parents understand that even at birth, a child's heart has a tendency towards evil. And no matter, you can give them the best conditions, you can give them the best food, you can give them the best education, and their heart still has a tendency towards evil. And so in the parenting process, we have to take that into account. And that's the first pitfall that I'd like to mention, that is assuming that our children start with a good heart. Now, there's a difference between a good heart and an innocent heart. Our children do start with an innocent heart because they haven't sinned. They haven't been exposed to a lot of evil or any evil when they're born. But they also start out with a heart that is in need of Jesus. They start out with a heart that will tend towards evil if it is left unchecked. And that, in a way, what I saw in that family is sort of proof. You know, here's this mother thinking, well, if the child is crying on the floor, then there must be some other reason besides just the fact that the child is just being naughty. You know, there must be some other reason. Maybe his stomach hurts, or maybe his pants are uncomfortable, or I don't know what other reasons there could be, but sometimes kids are just naughty and they need a little corrective measures to bring them back and say, hey, you're not supposed to act that way. I don't care what it is. You're just not supposed to act that way. So the first pitfall is simply that, assuming that a child is born with a good heart. Children are not born with good hearts. They're born with hearts that have a tendency towards evil. In fact, even David mentioned that. Psalm 51, verse 5, where he talks about even the fact that in his mother's womb, there was that tendency towards evil. So, that's the first pitfall. Pitfall number two is related, and very closely related. And that is sometimes we as parents either don't admit, or we don't care maybe, that we also are sinful. And I think it's very important that not only do I as a father understand my own sinfulness and be engaged in fighting that sinfulness and understand my need for the gospel and forgiveness, but that I also communicate that to my children. I think that too many children who grew up in Christian homes had parents who put on sort of a front as if they had it all figured out, that life was, you know, they were doing life perfectly. And children see through that so easily. So parents, we need to understand that we also have sinful hearts. And that also goes back to understanding the child's condition, because if the child has a heart that tends towards evil, and we think, well, we just shelter them from all evil, they'll be fine. We can't, because we can't shelter our child from ourselves. And we have to understand that our own example often fails our children. And that ought to make us rely all the more on God's grace in our own lives and in the lives of our children. So I think it's important that, of course, that we recognize the fact that we are sinful as parents. We recognize the fact that sometimes our example will fail them, that we are working on our own relationship with God. And, you know, that children see that before their eyes. That it's not always done in secret and private. That they see that, you know what, there are some things that I as a father struggle with. You know, sometimes I struggle with having enough patience. Sometimes I struggle with having the discipline that I need to maybe get my work done. Sometimes I struggle with whatever it might be. But they ought to see that, yes, we struggle, but where do we go for help? We go to God. We go to Jesus. And sometimes, of course, we make our own mistakes in our relationship with our children. And it's very, very vital that when we do that, when we say something that is a bit harsh or react in a way that we shouldn't to our children, that we quickly and sincerely ask them for their forgiveness. And that's another way that we can show that, yes, we are sinful, but we understand our need for the gospel. We understand our need for forgiveness. So pitfall number two is not admitting our own sinfulness as parents, or maybe not caring about our own sinfulness as parents. It's vital that we do that. Pitfall number three, that is not understanding the gospel. Now, maybe you're thinking, oh, well, you know, that's not so hard. You know, what is the gospel? Jesus lived, he died for our sins, he rose again on the third day, and if we ask him forgiveness, he'll forgive us. Well, here's the thing. It's not hard to come up with a theological statement of the gospel. In fact, I think that you could probably any, you know, famous atheist could give you a definition of the gospel. And sometimes I fear that when we talk about the gospel in our children, that we have boiled it down to just this, almost like a slogan. Like, okay, repeat after me. Okay, can you say this? Okay, great. You understand the gospel. And we forget a couple of key factors. One, the gospel is so much more than just words. The gospel is a truth that changes lives from the inside out. And being that kind of a truth, that means the gospel is something that has to be lived, not just spoken. And it's not enough for, yeah, we want our children to understand the basics of the gospel. We want them to know what it is, but that is simply not enough. They need to understand and see the gospel lived in our lives so that they can live it in their lives. So I think that sometimes there is maybe a basic misunderstanding of the gospel. A misunderstanding in the sense that, well, if my child can give me the theological definition of the gospel, then he understands the gospel. There's so much more going on in the hearts and minds of our children than simply being able to spout off a few theological truths. That is pitfall number three. When we think that the gospel is just some sort of a philosophy or a theological truth to spout off. All right, pitfall number four. And I mentioned this one. I won't talk about it too much because I mentioned it in a post not too long ago. And that is emphasis on behavior over character or over the condition of the heart of our child. And the post that I mentioned this in is called, what was it called? Stop Telling Your Child to Behave. That's what it's called. I posted just a week or two ago. And, you know, the idea here is that what I call convenience parenting, you know, we emphasize behavior often as parents because it's evident to us, because it bothers us, because it annoys us. I mean, I don't like it when I got five kids running and screaming around the house and I'm trying to study for a message. And yeah, I put headphones on, try to drown them out. Okay, so oftentimes, children's behavior bothers us, it annoys us, and we emphasize the behavior because it benefits us as a parent. We have to get beyond that. We have to get to their hearts. So yeah, behavior is important, but really, it's the heart that we are after as a parent. All right, that was pitfall number four, when we emphasize behavior over the heart attitude of our children. Pitfall number five, using Christianese, church language, to talk about spiritual things. You know, parents, this can be hard, especially if you as a parent grew up in the church. So easy just to copy that church language, and our children, they pick it up and they can say it and it sounds good, but what in the world does it mean? And here is the point where we as parents, you know, it's harder sometimes to communicate these truths, these spiritual truths that, you know, don't necessarily correspond to things that we can feel and touch. It's very difficult sometimes to communicate them on a level that can be understood by a 5-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 10-year-old, and sometimes a 40-year-old, to tell the truth. And sometimes it's that we don't understand them ourselves, and we're just spouting off those, you know, well, how do I get saved? Well, you need to accept Jesus into your heart, and then the Holy Spirit will seal you and sanctify you. You know, what does that mean? It doesn't tell me that. Give me something simple, something that I can understand. So we really need to watch our language and make sure that we're not using all that Christianese with our children. That's the fifth pitfall. All right. Pitfall number six. Okay, folks, I'm moving along here, so stay with me. Assuming that your child will accept the gospel. I think, And maybe this assumption is not always conscious or maybe not always outright, but I think there's kind of an assumption like, well, you know, I grew up in a Christian family and my kids are growing up in a Christian family and they go to church every Sunday and Sunday school and Awana, and they've got 523 verses memorized and they've got the Ten Commandments, you know, up on the wall in their bedroom, and their favorite movie is I don't know, the Ten Commandments or something, you know. And we can point to all these things, and it's almost just like we assume that, oh, well, they're going to be Christian. Or maybe we already assume that they are Christian, that they already have believed, and yet they haven't. And we can't make that assumption. We have to operate under the other assumption. We have to operate under the assumption that they don't believe, that we need to do everything possible to convince, to love them, to live a life that will bring them to a real, honest faith in their Savior. So let's not assume always that our children will accept the gospel. And sometimes don't even assume that they already have accepted the gospel. All right, moving on. Pitfall number 6. That is, sometimes we mistakenly think that Bible knowledge or good behavior means that the child has a good heart. And here's the deal here. Good behavior is great. Bible knowledge is great. But I think that we all know of that one kid in Sunday school that knows all the answers, and yet when he turns around, he's just a snotty kid. I mean, you just don't even like being around him because he is gonna, you know, tell you about how all the Sunday school awards he's got the attendance award and the Bible verses award and the Bible trivia award and all of that, but man, is he an annoying kid. Why? Because his heart is not really in the right place. He's not loving. His heart is not in the right place. And I think we all know those kind of snotty, stuck-up, Bible-thumping little kids. So Bible knowledge is not proof that the heart is in the right place of our child. It's a good thing. Yeah, Bible knowledge is a good thing, though. And neither is good behavior. And I think we ought to be careful about this, too. You know, in fact, just today, actually, someone that came over to our house for dinner said, oh, you have such a nice family. And they were very well-meaning when they said it, and I thanked them for it and everything. Your children are so well-behaved. But I did tell them, yeah, guess what? You know what? They're a lot better behaved when guests are around than when they're not around. Well, why is that? Again, because behavior can be motivated by things other than the heart, good behavior, that is. They can be motivated by rewards. You know, who knows? Maybe I promised my kids that, you know, we'd go to McDonald's the next day if they behave themselves while the guests were here. It can be behavior can be motivated by fear of punishment. Boy, you're going to get a spanking if you don't behave yourself in church today. And so we have to be careful when we talk about good behavior. Now, on the other hand, when we talk about evil behavior only comes from one place. It comes from the heart. Okay? If someone has a good heart and good motivations, you know, I can't force them to be evil. Okay? So we need to be careful. Bible knowledge, good behavior does not mean that our children have a good heart. And then, all right, final pitfall here, and I've definitely seen this in many families, and that is emphasizing health, maybe physical safety, academics, what kind of education you get, how you look, emphasizing all of those things above our child's relationship with God. And I remember just one key example. A couple years ago, young family just had a little baby, and they were so concerned about the effects of Wi-Fi on their little baby, that it was going to cause some damage to his brain or something. And so here they were running around this little child, making sure that no radio waves pass through his head or what have you. And at the same time, that husband and wife were fighting tooth and nail and ended up getting divorced. And I look at that and I'm just like flabbergasted. I'm thinking, you're worried about some radio waves affecting your child's brain? Do you not understand what your divorce is going to do to your child spiritually, emotionally, and the long-term lifetime effects that is going to have on your child? And I think that so often we are overly concerned about what our child eats. Are they eating enough? Are they eating the right things? Are they getting the exercise they need? Do they have the right clothes? Do they have the right look? Are they going to the right school? And those things all have their place, but they're really nothing in compared to the heart, the spiritual well-being of our children. And I think that's really the point that I'm trying to get across here. We need to focus on the heart. We need to focus on the root and the cause of problems in our children's life. And that's going to come from the heart. And you know, in order to do that, unfortunately, there's no cookie cutter way to do that. It's going to take hard work. It's going to take a lot of love. It's going to take a lot of commitment. It's going to take a lot of teaching. It's going to take some tears. And one thing I'm sure of, it's going to take a lot of God's grace on my part and on your part. All right, friends, stay tuned. I have a surprise interview here coming up. Well, friends, today I have with me a special guest in our studio, and her name is Anastasia Suko. And so I thought I'd introduce you to Anastasia. She is our, fourth child. And Anastasia, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, the school we learn in, it's a homeschool. So it's not quite that fun, but...
It's not quite that fun? What do you mean? I thought it was really fun.
Well, only my last video is really fun because it's class singing.
Well, why don't we start with this? First of all, how old are you?
I'm six.
6 years old. Almost?
Seven.
Yeah, you're almost seven. When's your birthday?
In October. October?
October. Do you know the date of your birthday?
21st. 21st? Okay.
October 21st. And where are we going to be when we celebrate your birthday?
In America.
Are you looking forward to that?
Mm-hmm.
What are you looking forward to doing, or why are you looking forward to America?
Well, it's really fun there.
It is kind of fun there, yeah.
Yeah, there's bunnies there, and there's... Well, we haven't seen Grandma and Grandpa there. We haven't been there for a long time.
Yeah, seeing Grandma and Grandpa is one of the big things, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, what are you up to today? What's the main thing you're doing today?
I can take a break today because...
Because today's Saturday, right? So no school today?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're going to go out on a walk or something? What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm going to go on a walk.
Okay. What kind of a thing would you want to wish everyone?
That they would have a nice school, whoever is doing a school
today. They'd have a good school day. Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. All right. Thinking. Oh, and by the way, Anastasia, but what do people usually call you?
They call me Noska.
Noska, for short, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for being here.
Bye.